and welcome to the Hybrid School Builders Podcast. I am your host, Rebecca Foley, and I am so glad you are joining me today. I am a fellow grassroots founder who is hoping to make your journey toward founding a sustainable hybrid school a little bit easier. If you are dreaming of starting a hybrid school, or perhaps you've already gotten started, you are in the right place. Join me as we dive into real stories, practical tips, and hard-won lessons that I have learned to help you launch and grow your program with confidence. Remember, building a hybrid school is not just about creating a business or creating jobs. It's not even about just serving the children who attend the program. It's literally about reshaping the landscape of education, and we can do that one community, one entrepreneur, and one program at a time. Hi. So today I wanted to delve a little bit into the major part, one of the most time-consuming parts of the infrastructure phase. So if you watch my video about the three phases of launching a new program, I talked about the beginning phase when you are making sure that you and your market are ready and that you are clear on your vision. And then the second phase is building up your infrastructure, okay? Now, a big part of this is the actual physical facility. The other pieces of infrastructure are things like your website presence, payroll systems, insurance, admission systems, ways to collect money, bookkeeping, forms, policies and procedures, and having all of that in a place where it can flow. And you could collect people's information, you could collect payments, you can pay people. All of that is the other big part of infrastructure. And you could certainly be working on that while you are working on a facility. In fact, I would encourage you to do that. But I'm specifically wanting to talk in this episode about actually finding a physical facility. Now, remember that I am talking mostly to hybrid schools, which are only meeting part-time. And this is a big distinction because a part-time program cannot afford full-time rent, okay? Unless you have actually a full-time program made up of multiple part-time programs, that is quite possible. So I don't want to forget to mention that, because if you want to start from that direction and say, no, I want a full-time facility that's mine, that I can set up how I want, and it's going to cost, you know, this much money, or maybe you already have a possibility that you're looking at, but you're building a hybrid program, you are probably going to have multiple hybrid programs, like a 2-day and a 3-day, or a 2-day and another 2-day and a 1-day enrichment or something like that. Because building simply cannot sit empty if you're paying full-time, you know, market rates. Obviously, if you're not paying market rates, that's a different story, but you still want to make sure you're really understanding what accurate costs are. Okay, so given that, a hybrid program often ends up in a church. A lot of the ones that I have heard of and talked to, one that I helped to build, always ended up in churches. Now, the reason for that is because churches are places of charitable goodwill for the community. And they have tax exempt status, and they very often have classrooms sitting empty. And most of the time, they are not going to be charging you. I have never heard of them charging any kind of program that's using your facility at full-time commercial rates. I don't think they're even allowed to do that. Now, most churches are going to want to have the expenses of having you there covered. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But let me talk about some of the other options, okay? Now, if you plan on staying small, you know, if you're more of the micro school size and you have space in your own property, that can be a really excellent way to do it. You know, some people will convert like a garage or a shed, or even put in a shed, which would be a bit of an investment, but something where they can take in a dozen, maybe, I suppose, up to 20 kids, depending on the space. And they can just own the facility. But let me talk about why it's important for you to understand your vision and what your program is going to look like, at least over the first couple of years, as you're choosing the facility. okay, this is why you need to have a good handle on what the sizes of your classes are, how the kids are going to be spending their day, and what kind of storage you need, how many hours they're in the rooms. All of that stuff is really important for you to figure out what kind of facility is important, okay? Now, for instance, our Charlotte Mason program has a lot of outdoor time. There's nature study where they're actually outside walking and studying nature, and also recess time where they're able to be outside and play. Because of that, when we were looking at buildings, we did not look at buildings in the city that had no green space. Now, that's not to say that you couldn't still do that. I mean, there's plenty of Charlotte Mason style programs that bring nature inside or go for walks on the sidewalks or go to a nearby park. So you can get creative with that for sure. But that's just an example of how we really wanted the kids to be able to run around outside, play. There was a creek. By some miracle, there was a creek at every building that we had in the elementary campus. And that was three different buildings. And have woods to walk through, green space, a parking lot. So these things will help inform what you're prioritizing as you search, okay? And I visited a lot of buildings, dozens of buildings. And you're walking through the buildings, you're looking at the classrooms, you're looking at the outdoor space, you're looking at the doors and how they lock and where, you know, where the bathrooms are. You're looking at all of these things and you're thinking about your program. And sometimes it can be hard to prioritize what is the most important. You might have a building that has, you know, a couple of basement classrooms that have no windows, but it has a beautiful outdoor space, okay? Or you might have a building that has a beautiful outdoor space, but the classrooms are pretty small, but maybe you could pull it off, right? So it's hard to like know which one to prioritize, even when you do have a clear vision, simply because your choices are usually limited to the reality of what is around you. But all that to say, it's really important that you do have a clear vision of what your mission is and what the most important things are to you in your program. If that's smaller classrooms, then small classes might be fine if you only want 8 or 10 kids in a class, because that's one of your top priorities. And small classrooms are fine. If you don't have a huge outdoor component, but you want to have 15 or 16 kids in each class, then you know you're looking for buildings that have spacious classrooms. And it's not as important that they have a lot of outdoor space, okay? So make sure that you're really clear on your vision before you do your building search, okay? Now, like I said, the options are usually your own personal space, but that's almost always very limited as far as how many kids you can actually fit. And that's why you need to have at least a 3-year plan. Not to say that you couldn't get started the first year on your own property with a small, you know, a dozen or 20 kids, even if you planned on growing after that. That's not a bad idea if you have the space, because it gives you time to like establish before you then go on a building search. But a building search is a lot of time. You know, you kind of have to balance when you want to do that and what the possibilities are and like how confident you are in your market when you're making that decision. You could also start in a community center or something like that. However, again, you have to understand the realities of setting up and taking down classrooms if you have to use a space that's shared in common with other, you know, organizations or other use. It can be quite a burden on the teachers if they have to set everything up and take everything down. But it is not impossible, okay? But unlike a co-op, usually the kids in a hybrid school are there for a lot longer than a co-op and they're doing a lot more things. So the classrooms actually being set up comfortably where you're not having to lug in all of the books and all of the maps and all of the everything is pretty important for the stability of the program and for the quality, and so that your staff and teachers don't get burnout, okay? But those are just things to think about. However, I am always a fan of not being discouraged and saying, well, you know, we're just going to close that door because of, you know, this is just something that we can't overcome. This is a hurdle we can't jump over. There could be creative ways. Okay, you could get paravolunteers to help with things if you're organized about it and you rotate through it. You know, you can get the kids to work. Sometimes, a lot of times, unless they're really small, they can move chairs and tables. They can carry things. You can use maybe a storage shed that you can put outside of a building, possibly, you know, depending on where it is. There's a lot of different things that you could try. Okay. But your ideal is to be able to set up your classes pretty comfortably and be able to leave things there enough that you're not burning out your staff and your teachers. Okay. Now, a commercial space, like I said, an actual commercial space that you would go talk to a realtor and go look at commercial, like storefront type of places, unless you have a full-time program, they're probably going to be outside of your budget range. You can look for sure, but they're, in my experience, the cost of that, because you've got your utilities and it has to be, you're going to have to all the setup costs unless you, it's already set up, you know, like a, maybe a daycare center or a preschool or something, or a school that's closed, might be set up perfectly and beautifully. And that could be a possibility, but unless you're sharing it with another program or you have multiple part-time programs and you're really confident in your market that you're going to be able to fill it and bring in the revenue and you have all the programming. Also, don't forget about summers, right? If you don't have a full year program and the building is sitting open 3 months of the year, like in the summer, and it's not being used, you, in commercial spaces, you generally don't get to just not pay rent, right? You have to think through that stuff. It's a big commitment to get a commercial space. But it's not impossible. Again, you would have to understand what the costs were and make sure you understand all of them, the setup, the utilities, all of that stuff, top of just the rent. And if you really felt confident, or maybe you've got some momentum already and you felt confident you could fill multiple programs and fill up all the days and run summer programming, and you would actually feel confident you have the revenue and the programming to support the rent, then by all means, go ahead and try that out. The most affordable option, and I'm leaving this to last, but even though I mentioned it in the beginning, is generally a church, because they will often, the churches that I've worked with, will only ask you to cover your costs of being there, which means you don't have to pay in the summer if you're not running summer programming. They're not trying to make money off of you. They already own the building. They already have their own costs. They just want to you to cover the costs of maybe additional heating, wear and tear in the building, paper goods, all of that kind of thing. And that's what they're trying to ask you to cover. And that is generally, it can still be a very significant amount of money. You know, it's not like free. Most churches won't do this for absolute free, but a fraction of, as in like maybe a fourth of what a commercial space would cost. Let me just remind you that most of the time, in my knowledge, and you can talk to a CPA about this, but because churches are nonprofit and they have tax-exempt property status, they cannot rent to a private business without making sure that it is done correctly, because it causes unrelated business income for them. They have to make sure that they understand that you're a private business. If you are an LLC, they need to talk to their CPA about that. It's not impossible, but make sure that you talk to a CPA and you communicate clearly to the church and ask them to talk to their CPA if you are an LLC, because you do not want to get yourself into a position where you're jeopardizing their tax-exempt status. And depending on who you talk to there, I mean, the leaders should know this already, but depending on who you talk to there, you could get into the conversations, and then, heaven forbid, then somebody's like, oh, you're an LLC, you're not a nonprofit, and the whole thing falls apart, okay? So you want to be abundantly clear about your business status. And honestly, like I said in an earlier episode, sometimes a program will become a nonprofit
not just so that they can use volunteers as like labor, you know, labor, that's the economic term, as workers, as part of their like staffing, and so that they can apply for grants and take tax exempt donations, but also so that they don't run into trouble partnering with the church and using their facilities. Okay. So don't forget that. If you're an LLC and you're like, no, I'm just my own private business, I'm going to rent from another private business, then, you know, you're not going to be talking to churches at all.
Thanks so much for listening today. Don't forget to subscribe and make sure you check out the resources I am developing at startahybridschool.com. Send me an email anytime. I would love to hear from you. Until next time.